Jay Pizzy, Mosier on the beat. Look at my team, ay. Look at the ring, whoa. See what I mean, ay. You see what I mean? Look at my team, look at the ring, everything. This is a dream, all but a dream. This ain't a dream, I am a fiend for the cream, go. DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
See, I calculate. Yeah, y'all just palpitate. Whoa, if you don't calculate, get it? Get it? Calculate. Lady Justice is illustrious. I just love this. I can put this in this function and it turns up into something. And that something came from nothing. And I sold it for a button. Now I got this lovely lump sum. Guess I'll burn these bumps like buzzing, bro.
Welcome to the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast, a show dedicated to Dynasty fantasy football trades and player values, with your hosts, John Paul Hurley and Izzy Elkafoss.
This ain't a dream, I am a fiend.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the DTC Podcast. Did that sound bad?
No, it sounded fine, but it's just... Just keep going.
This is episode number 183. We got a lot of stuff to cover this week, so we're going to get into it right away. What do you think about Marlon Mack? I'm just kidding. We'll do the normal setups and stuff here. This for the people that are listening right now, there's probably going to be a huge Easter egg at the end of the podcast because we've had what I would call a failure to launch on this week's episode with like technical difficulties, like difficult, like everyday dad stuff, like just everything is coming at us all at once here. I'm quitting.
Dad difficulties, dog difficulties.
Yeah, dog, dad. Technical, everything.
Not good.
Yeah, it's bad. It's almost as bad as Marlon Mack's start to a season.
Sad
issues. Anyway, we've got tons of stuff to cover. I'm your host, by the way, John Paul Hurley. Find me on Twitter at FF Hercules. And joining me this week is my fabulous co-host, Izzy Elkafoss.
Oh, I thought you were just going to leave it with Izzy. I'm close to first name basis, I'd say, for most people. Like Prince and Madonna and Seal.
Are you going to become like the artist formerly known as the Pharaoh or something like that?
Oh,
and you're
going to
have some sort of weird symbol, like an upside down pyramid?
That'd be sick.
That would be pretty sick. Like you're flipping it upside down.
Should I just have the pyramid with the eye, like Illuminati, and just kind of like really run with that?
Illuminizzi?
Illuminizzi. That's going to be my new Twitter handle.
Yes, we did it. You got to create some separation from people who are stealing the Pharaoh name.
Yes. We got to get those guys on the show, by the way.
And we should do like some sort of weird like pyramid scheme with our newfound fame. Like we'll do, right?
Yes.
But it's actually with pyramids. Yeah, we'll actually use pyramids. We're selling pyramids and we'll recruit people to sell pyramids with us. And any percent, we get a percent of their sales, right?
Yes. we're literally doing a pyramid scheme.
This is probably, I'm going to say more than probably, this is definitely the best idea I've ever had.
I like it.
Another idea I've had is maybe recording a fantasy football dynasty podcast, which we're going to do right now, I promise. We've got a lot of things to cover. This is turning out to be a pretty loosey-goosey show, so let's keep going.
Yeah.
Izzy wanted me to come up with something creative for the name of this next segment we're going to cover, kind of like by position around the league, dynasty stories, basically. So I'm going to call this segment Something Creative. What do you think?
I like it. That's good. Better than I would have come up with. Yeah,
you wanted something creative. So that's what we went with.
Good.
All right. The first storyline, we're going to talk about quarterbacks to begin with. The first storyline on Something Creative is Mitch Trubisky. I bet you didn't think we were going to talk about him going into the week, did you?
No. No, not at all.
And like Mosier said, our producer, he mentioned it kind of all took place in the fourth quarter, but he ended up being a top 10 quarterback fantasy scoring wise this week.
Top seven.
He pulled off the win. He earns himself a little bit more like distance on his leash, right? His leash becomes a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
Footlong Foles is waiting in the wings, but Trubisky steps out of the shadows.
Yeah, this is interesting because Trubisky looked really bad for three quarters and looked actually pretty solid in the fourth, where he threw three touchdowns. I think like most people, if you actually watch the Bears, if you box score scouted, you would think that Trubisky had a really good game. You know, just south of 250 yards, was pretty efficient, threw three touchdowns, so on and so forth. But if you watch the game, you would be disheartened with the performance. So this is one of those things where maybe the offense has, the offensive coordinator has figured things out. The play calling has figured out a way to make Trubisky great again, or great for the first time. And maybe we see more of that in the coming quarters for the next couple weeks. I don't know. I just don't see it with him. I just don't see it with him. If you do have a Trubisky share or two, I would move the piss out of it.
Yeah. I thought this is one of the times that the commentators actually stood out to me, because they were pointing out through the first two or three quarters, like, Trubisky was either his timing or his placement. I think it was more to do with placement than anything, but he was missing his receivers. Like, he was throwing them short. He's throwing them covered, which is kind of a new concept for me. A lot of good quarterbacks will throw receivers open. And Trubisky was throwing his receivers covered. Does that make sense to you at all?
Yeah, with Trubisky, everything makes sense.
That's hilarious. So there was a little bit of a placement issue. I shouldn't say little, but it was a big placement issue through the first three quarters. And then, like, it seemed like all of a sudden things clicked for him and he flashed on a couple plays like we've seen him do in his past. But I wonder if he'll just kind of revert back to his Trubisky lifestyle again after this week, you know?
Maybe. What was it? Was it the wild card game? Or in 2018, Trubisky had a good game, and it kind of got everybody excited for 2019. Or not everybody, a lot of people excited for 2019. So this could just be a really good moment for him, and he'll go back to being Trubisky, which is likely the odds-on favorite right now. Mm-hmm. But he looked really uncomfortable the entire game, or the first three quarters. So if you can somehow sneak out a late first for Trubisky, I would be trying to pull that trigger to a team, you know, to a team that's maybe desperate at quarterback. Because, you know, guys like, for instance, if you were a guy that's really putting your money down on Baker, I just don't think it's ever going to click for Baker.
And that's good, because Baker is our next, and actually like our final discussion point for the quarterbacks section. So let's go into it.
Yeah, it's a good point. So, like, if you have Baker and you feel like, okay, I can trade Baker for something and then get Trubisky back for cheaper in some sort of trade, I don't know. I think they're both the same to me right now. They're both quarterbacks that are going to give you very inconsistent production and are replaceable level. So why would you have a guy that's twice as expensive? He's basically Trubisky with hype.
Yeah.
I just don't see much of a difference.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's wild. And I would say, outside of maybe a couple of teams, Baker has some really top-end talent to throw to. So you can't really blame route running, pass catching. And they brought in Austin Hooper. He just doesn't have any more excuses, you know? So
no,
it's him.
He's just not good, dude. He's just not
good. It would be interesting to have like a point and counterpoint show and have somebody who was bought into Baker Mayfield and have him try to argue for him, because it's like you're running out of points, you know, like it's not working.
I look at this similar to like a catcher in baseball, a goalie in hockey. A lot of this is confidence based. And I think Baker was kind of taking his confidence from Oklahoma into the NFL, had a good start to his career. And so all of his production, I think, was just buoyed by just a shit ton of confidence. And then I feel like it's gotten to the point now where he has lost his confidence and his mojo she gone.
Yeah.
So I don't think Baker naturally, like from a natural talent perspective, like right now, if you watch Gardner Minshew and Baker Mayfield, you know, two undersized quarterbacks, one's got swagger and one doesn't. Like, Minshew mm-hmm. looks like he's got swagger, he's got confidence, and Baker does not. Similar to Trubisky, he doesn't look like he's confident at all.
Yeah, Minshew looks like he's playing a preseason game right now. Yeah, against, he's just like backups.
Yeah, just giant balls. You know, he's just walking around with giant balls.
That's probably what it is. Maybe he really has giant balls.
Just monstrous balls. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, you can tell because he has difficulty walking around. He's like all bow legged and stuff.
He's just bow legged. Yeah. yeah. So I'd be trying to sell Trubisky for a late first. And honestly, if I can get a solid first for Baker, I don't know if I'd trade Baker for a first just because he's probably one of your top two quarterbacks. But I would be doing everything I can to package Baker in something to upgrade that position.
Yeah. And I mean, at this point, you need to wait. Like, Baker has been known to have like a couple of good games with like, you know, wait for him to have like a 302 game before you ship him though. And then try to find somebody that believes that he's turning it around, you know, like
that's fair. He's playing Cincy this week.
There you go.
So that could be a good bounce back opportunity. So yeah, hold for now. Good point.
You got to hope Baker cooks up something good before you can sell the muffins.
Nice. Nice job. Thanks.
We could probably end the podcast on that note, right?
Yes.
We're done. We go.
That
was quarterback. So like there was a ton of storylines for quarterbacks. We felt that those two were the most relevant. Continue.
Are you believing in Cam? Like, would you be comfortable owning Cam right now?
I would be really uncomfortable. I'm kind of uncomfortable even when you're saying his name. Cam Newton. By the way, we have to decipher now. It's Cam Newton.
Instead of Akers?
Yeah, you have to say his full name now. True. That there's another relevant Cam in the NFL. But I feel very uncomfortable as a Cam Newton owner. But the only thing that I feel good about is that you probably got him for really cheap. If you weren't the person that was holding on to him for years, you probably acquired him for cheap, whether it was in a trade or a startup draft. So you probably feel pretty good about that. But I'd be cashing in my chips right now. I'm a conservative gambler, but I'd be cashing in.
What quarterback would you try to get in a deal for Cam?
Baker Mayfield and Mitchell Trubisky.
Okay, perfect.
No, I'd probably be targeting somebody who had kind of like a little bit of an unexpected slow start. And you know, my guys, in my opinion. So maybe I'd target somebody like Goff. I would try to get a lot younger at the position, and I would try to find somebody who had a slow start that I believe in, and that would be like a Jared Goff for me.
Okay.
How about you?
I feel like I'm in your boat. I feel like it's a solid time to be moving Cam. We saw what he could do. He had a good game. His rushing is back. He carried the ball a lot more than anybody expected. 2 rushing touchdowns, which is huge for fantasy. And he looked pretty solid. So all that being said, the injury history for me with Cam, it's kind of similar to Big Ben. Like, I feel like they're just ticking time bombs. So I wouldn't mind cashing in the chips. And I agree with you. Find somebody that you like personally that you would be moving. And I'm okay trying to do the Goff thing or the Darnold thing. I'm okay trying that. You might be actually taking a hit for 2020, but it might be a solid gamble long term.
I don't think you'll take a hit in 2020 no matter what you do, because I honestly believe that if Cam is going to relegate himself to coming out of the pocket and rushing 10 to 12 times a game, like I don't think it's feasible that he'll have that average. But if he's coming out that many times, he's really opening himself up to becoming a serious injury risk this season. And I'm very concerned about that portion of his game.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
So I'm running away, no pun intended.
Nice.
Is there a specific quarterback you'd target in a trade right now?
No, just
switch it up.
Just Stafford.
Stafford.
Like, it's like the easiest default answer for quarterbacks to buy, because he never gets expensive. He's always like a mid QB2 value, and over the course of a season, he'll always put up numbers. Yeah. So like if whenever in doubt, just trade for Stafford.
I wish that rhymed. Dang it.
Be nice.
You gotta try to think of something that rhymes so it's a better saying. And like you'll remember it next week, you know? Don't do the math, just trade for staff.
I like it. Okay. I like it.
That's all we got. Okay. I mean,
it's pretty good.
Yeah. So that's the quarterback talk of the Something Creative segment. We can move on to running backs because this is the meat of our discussion. I almost want to keep running backs for the end of the show just to keep people engaged, but we're going to go right into it. So we're going to kind of break it down by team just because with each running back story, it kind of impacts all of the backs on the team. So up first, we're going to talk about the Houston Texans backfield. So we had Redemption City with David Johnson, first of all, right?
Yeah. And Duke got hurt, but he actually looked pretty damn good. Like, it's evident that last year was an injury riddled season, and the reason why he struggled so badly was the injuries. Doesn't look like he's lost too much of a step. And another thing is, we probably should have seen the workload coming in a sense, because I mean, Bill O'Brien traded DeAndre Hopkins for him. So there's no way in hell he was going to trade DeAndre Hopkins for David Johnson and not try to make David Johnson work. So, you know, for those of us that held on to David Johnson through all of this, I think now we could reap the benefits. And he is going up against the Baltimore team. So if you want to cash in, this week. If you want to cash in now on the David Johnson week one game, now's the time to do it. I just don't think he's going to have a good game against the Ravens. And if he does have a good game against the Ravens, it's wheels up the rest of the season.
And I would say that there's a possibility he could because he's multidimensional, but yeah, I wouldn't expect it.
Yeah. But any first gets David Johnson for me.
Yeah, and I would say he compares to Cam Newton. If he scares you because of his recent injury history over the past 3 or 4 years, he's had plenty. And you want to cash your chips in, he had a great first week and you're concerned, he'd be a good one to run away from. I think I'm personally hanging on to him because I think we can get more out of his season. And I think he's going to continue to bounce back here. But very similar in a sense where he's kind of come back. And I think he's even in a better position to carry some bigger workload with Duke Johnson being out. I don't think it's his Duke Johnson's injury is going to be like a week-to-week thing, right?
Yeah.
An ankle? I can't remember if it was high or low.
I believe it was low.
Okay. So that's probably good for him, but...
Yeah, I mean, DJ's going to be the guy. It's a durability thing. An age. It's an age and durability. Like, one injury to David Johnson plummets his value, and then you're going to be holding on to a 29-year-old running back.
Yeah.
After the season. So, I feel like you likely win the season with DJ not being in your top two running backs. And if you have depth behind him, I would definitely try to ship him for a first that you can get your hands on.
Yeah, cash in. Like, you... Again, another situation where you probably bought them really low or you drafted them really low. So you've already made an instant profit. So it's a win no matter what you do, whether you hold or sell.
And the best part about it is if you trade him for a first, if you can get a first in return, you don't need to hold on to that first. But as the season goes on, if you start losing some of your running back depth, you can trade that first that you got from DJ for another running back that hopefully is younger and could be a little bit better.
Yeah, there you go. So that we're kind of getting warmed up. Another more compelling story, in my opinion, was the Rams backfield. This was a game that was dominated by a one Malcolm Brown. I don't know that anybody anticipated his workload being that large in the first game. But it looks like Cam now has plenty of competition in order to earn some work share in that backfield. What was your breakdown of this situation?
Yeah, so Cam got the start and he didn't look very good. There wasn't a lot of opportunity for him to make anything happen, but he wasn't being very creative with his runs. And Malcolm Brown came in. Every time Malcolm Brown came in, he looked significantly better than Cam Akers.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and not only just better than Cam Akers, but Malcolm Brown just looked good actually somehow, right?
Yeah, no, he did. He looked really solid, but he's looked solid the last couple of years, and he just hasn't gotten. This is where draft capital comes into play. You know, with Todd Gurley and the money that he was getting, he was always going to have the opportunity. Then Henderson came in and everybody was on the Henderson train and left Malcolm Brown, you know, to pasture. And now we did the same thing with Henderson. And we just assumed Henderson was going to be better than Brown just because we want him to be. And then Cam Akers, we assumed would be the guy because they spent high draft capital on him. But when push comes to shove, Malcolm Brown right now looks significantly better than both. So I think it's going to be Malcolm Brown having a 60-40 split over the other two. So I see this being a 60-30-10 going in favor of Malcolm Brown until...
He lets go of it.
Yeah, and they're definitely going hot hand. You could tell they're going hot hand. And Malcolm Brown, not only I think is the better running back over the past couple of years over... Daryl Henderson over last year over Daryl Henderson, but it's evident that he's better than Cam Akers right now, whether he's more comfortable with the offense. He's getting, obviously Cam might just be getting used to NFL and, you know, just the kind of the pace of the game and he needs some time, but.
And it could be a scheme thing too, right?
Yeah. I just don't see any way that Malcolm Brown isn't the guy going to be leading the backfield in week two. Based on the performances from week one.
So how about going forward? Does this make you concerned about your Cam shares?
Not really. It would have been nice to see him get some touches, but at the same time, you look at what happened with Jonathan Taylor and Indy, like he wasn't getting any work. None. He was getting no work until...
He was getting work in the passing game, which was surprising, but yeah, otherwise not between the tackles. Yeah,
but no groundwork until Marlon Mack got hurt. And then you look at J.K. Dobbins, he was getting sprinkled in. You look at the Lions, DeAndre Swift wasn't even starting. He was third into the lineup behind Adrian Peterson and Kerryon Johnson. And then
I feel like those two are different because people drafted J.K. Dobbins with the understanding that it's going to take some time for him to take over. Whereas people drafted Cam in the understanding thinking that things are a little bit more open for him to jump in right away. So that's
and
the
he started.
Difference.
I mean, the difference between the other guys is he started. At least the coaching staff started Cam Akers.
And they changed.
They didn't start DeAndre Swift. They didn't start J.K. Dobbins. They didn't start Jonathan Taylor. So he had a leg up going into week one. He just, the leg fell off.
That's not good for him. Ouch.
So I'm cautiously optimistic with Cam Akers, it's hard to deny that Malcolm Brown, like you said, not only looked better than Cam Akers, just looked good in general.
Yeah. It was kind of reminiscent. We didn't actually have this on our agenda, but we can just briefly mention it. It was, it reminded me a little bit of the Chargers situation too, you know, with Eckler. Austin Eckler.
Yeah.
Yep. So Eckler and Joshua Kelly, like, was Kelly on your radar before this game at all?
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that's gotten a lot of hype over the last few weeks, and I do have a few shares of him just because it's like, you know, Eckler might not be a guy that's going to carry the ball 250 times. So it was a really good bet to pick up Joshua Kelly.
Yeah.
It is surprising that he looked so much better than Eckler when he got the opportunities.
Yeah.
And what's more surprising with them, I mean, Eckler still got 19 carries to Josh Kelly. I think Joshua had 14 or 15. But what was most surprising is Eckler only had one reception. And that was what we were expecting him to, you know, to have to carry his fantasy production throughout the course of the season was getting the reception production that he got with Phillip Rivers. But it's clear, you know, Tyrod, everybody calls him Tyrod.
Yeah, that was
weird. It might be Tyrod, actually. I remember us having this conversation before. Let's call him Taylor. Taylor is not checked down Charlie Rivers. So... And that was evident, too. I mean, with Mike Williams, I mean, they were pushing the ball down the field. Mike Williams led the team in targets. So it's not what I expected the Chargers' offense to look.
No.
And I think buying Joshua Kelly is off the books now. He's going to be more expensive than he needs to be. And Eckler could be a guy that you monitor for the next couple weeks.
Yeah,
potentially being a buy.
What a strange week as far as satellite backs are concerned, right? Because, like, a lot of people would have put big money on the fact that Eckler would have, like, a ton of targets, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. There's a lot of running backs that I would have guessed would have had a ton of targets, and they just didn't. I don't understand how that changed, but it did, you know?
Yeah, it's just, it's weird. I mean, even with the, you're talking about satellite back, Jonathan Taylor, the guy that everybody's concerned about catching passes, led all rookie running backs in receptions.
Yeah, and not only the rookie running backs, but a lot of vets too, including Nyheim Hines on the same team, who many regard as just passing down guy, you know?
This is why shit just doesn't make sense
to
most people. You look and you see Clyde, right? And you see Jonathan Taylor, and it's evident that Clyde is a better receiver than Jonathan Taylor. And then even Dobbins and Cam Akers and DeAndre Swift all having better passing down pedigree than Jonathan Taylor. And they draft Jonathan Taylor, don't give him any carries. They give Nyheim Hines carries before Jonathan Taylor, and then they give him the passing down work. It's just mind-boggling. It kind of goes to show that either nobody knows what the F they're doing in the Twitter fantasy scout community, or the teams don't know what they're doing.
I think it's more if you were scouting the Colts, okay, like going into the game, and you know what we're talking about. You know, like Jonathan Taylor didn't see a lot of work in passing games in college. Nyheim Hines is their satellite back, and they're going to be in a passing situation when Nyheim Hines is lined up in the backfield. Now, all of a sudden, you got an offensive coordinator or a coach that's calling plays that kind of like go against the grain of what you thought. And maybe that left some openings, and maybe that was their intention. So it's either one of those two things you mentioned, or it was a game plan thing.
So you're basically saying Frank Reich's an absolute moron. Because what he's trying to do is he's trying to throw the Jaguars off week one than he is trying to maximize his team's ability.
Yes. So maybe he's overthinking it.
Yeah, that definitely plausible. I mean, it actually probably makes the most sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is, I found that very, very interesting.
I guess we don't know what percentage of the times that, let's say Jonathan Taylor was lined up in the backfield for a run and there was an audible or something too. So like, that's a factor, but either way, it was a surprising week when it comes to predicting workloads, you know?
So now Taylor or CEH, with Mac being gone, who would you rather have?
I still like CEH because of the offense, and it was weird to see how involved Nyheim Hines was. I still think they're very close, and I think Jonathan Taylor has closed the gap a little bit. Actually, I think, honestly, with CEH getting 20-plus touches and Jonathan Taylor got, what, 10?
Yeah, something like that. Wasn't good.
I think CEH has pulled away more, so I still say CEH, but it's going to be a situation worth monitoring. I'd be curious to see, like, next week if he gets all of Mac's love, you know, like, if he gets all of Mac's touches and that continues on, or if Nyheim Hines just picks up the slack from Mac when Jonathan Taylor's in the back, you know?
The way I look at this, I've seen a lot of people now putting Taylor up there with CEH, and to me, what was evident was CEH was the guy from the start, ceded a few carries to Darrell Williams, but he was their guy. Jonathan Taylor was third of the party. And it's just like, if the coaching staff is so much more confident in CEH and KC than they are with Jonathan Taylor and Indy, even with the Mac injury, I have a hard time ignoring the order of touches that Indy ran with week one. So I think even with the Mac injury, I think the gap has been even bigger for CEH after week one.
Yeah, I agree.
Because of how they were utilized in the first week. And it's still young. I mean, the season's still young, and maybe Reich was trying to get way too cute. And I have no idea. But the CEH is such a safer bet right now. And it's clear that Casey is comfortable with him, and Indy doesn't look like they're off to a good start with comfortability with Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, and the receptions for CEH are coming, you know, like, it's inevitable. So it'll be fun to see what kind of season he has.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So moving on to, we got two more to cover for the running backs. The next backfield to cover is the Lions. So the Lions backfield ended up being a very interesting situation. And one note that I wanted to start this out on is, you and I were talking during the games about confidence and how important confidence is, especially like to get off on the right foot as a rookie, your first game, your first impression to fans, and what that means for your confidence level. And I think I brought up Devontae Booker, like his very first carry as an NFL running back was a fumble. And like, you wonder how much that's impacted his career. And it wasn't his very first touch, but DeAndre Swift dropped a boneheaded touchdown. Like, it was bad. It was a bad, bad drop, wide open end zone. And it just fell right out of his hands, lost his concentration, whatever the case was. But what do you think this means for his confidence going forward?
You know, it's hard because this is one of those intangibles that we don't know. Like, how strong,
how resilient
will is he to like put it past him and not have it affect him? So we don't really know. What we do know, though, is a few things. One, he led the running back stable in targets, which is important. Two, even though he was last into the game for running, and he didn't get a lot of work, you know, in early downs, he was their goal line back, which is really odd. So I would have expected it to be AP or carry on for the goal line work. This is another thing, like, just like the Indy stuff didn't make sense, the order of them, they started AP after being with the team for a week. Okay, fine. You start AP, who's 34 years old, might be 35 years old. Old. AP is old, new to the team, and you give him all the work early, and then you mix in carry on with Swift, and then you give Swift the goal line work.
He's 35, yeah.
Yeah, this stuff's confusing to me. Like, I don't understand it. And I don't think many people do. They don't get it. And where do we go from here? Like, with that, and this is the big issue that I had with Swift coming into the season. You know, we talked about this ad nauseum, I feel, on the podcast. The reason why Swift was the last of the running backs to be drafted onto my teams, in my opinion, behind the Dobbinses and the Akers, Taylors, and the CEHs, despite him being talented, was because Detroit was going to be an absolute shit show. Patricia comes from Bill Belichick's horseshit line lineage of screwing over every running back stable that you have and just making it a complete cluster for dynasty owners and fantasy owners. And it looks like this is going to be another one of those situations. Like, he learned everything from Bill, and this is how it's going to be, it feels like. Yeah. So I'm fading. Despite me picking up a few Swifts just because he was the best value, I was getting him at 107, 108, and I was like, okay, I'll take Swift here and hedge in case I'm wrong. It doesn't look like it's going to be very smooth sailing for Swift, especially early on in his career.
Yeah, where do we go now, right?
Yeah, and honestly, if he catches that, here's the thing that really just chaps my ass. If he catches that pass and it's a touchdown, the dynasty community and fantasy community can have a completely different opinion of DeAndre Swift going into week two. And I could actually move my DeAndre Swift shares.
Yeah,
the fact that he dropped that, the fact that he dropped that pass, that one pass changes his value trajectory significantly. And it was just that one play. So now I'm stuck holding the bag on Swift, and I'm not confident in the Detroit coaching staff moving forward.
You're right. So, it's like it's 9 more points. It puts him over 20, so like 20.3, and that puts him in the company with like top 10. Like Dalvin Cook had 21, David Johnson had 19.9. So like he is top 10 for the week, and that's something to be excited about, you know?
Yeah, and what he would have had, what he would have had 9 touches. He would have had 20 points on 9 touches, something like that.
Yeah, very efficient.
And most people be like, oh, you know, that's really good. It's just like volume is king. And if we're not getting, I always look for volume. If the volume isn't there, I don't care how efficient somebody is. I don't
Except
want
Melvin
that
Gordon.
Player.
Yeah.
What's that?
Except Melvin Gordon, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is king. I mean, the reason why Melvin Gordon put up so many fantasy points over the course of his career is he was getting volume.
Yeah, but
it
you wasn't still didn't like him.
I didn't like him because I felt like the talent would catch up to him. Like, he would eventually not be the guy, right? They would figure out, like, hey, Melvin Gordon isn't that good. And I feel like, to me, I always just try to chase the volume, and the volume isn't going to be there for Swift. And I just, I don't like starting guys that are going to be getting 10 touches a game and getting, you know, sure, he can have a 20-point outburst, but I'm going to get that inefficiency, and I can't stand that. Can't stand inefficiency. Can't stand boomer bust players on a week-to-week basis. So it's just frustrating.
Speaking of boomer bust players on a week-to-week basis, the last team we got to cover is James Conner and the Pittsburgh Steelers, featuring Benny and the Snells.
I like that.
Like that?
Benny and the Snells. I like that.
So regardless of whether or not James Conner was banged up in this game, Benny Snell looked good somehow, and he looked fast. He looked fast relative to old school Benny Snell from college.
Yeah, and Benny, I mean, Benny's never been like a speedster guy, but he obviously looks quite a bit thinner. It's evident. And he looked pretty damn good. Like, I was, out of all the backup running backs, Malcolm Brown looked really good. Benny Snell was up there. He looked good. Like,
yeah,
significantly good. It wasn't a James Conner got hurt and then Benny Snell was the guy. So now we're just gravitating toward Benny because he's going to get the volume. No, he actually mixed volume with talent. Like, he looked more talented than James Conner. And now James Conner, no surprise to anybody, is hurt again.
Don't know how serious it is yet, but
I would be very confident. I would be trying to give up any second round pick right now to acquire Benny Snell. I would be very confident in that. Like, it's a gamble worth making because I don't trust James Conner's health, and Pittsburgh likes to run the ball. They got good plus opportunities for the running backs, and they always make run throughout the course of Tomlin's career there. They always make running backs work. And if Snell is the guy, he's going to be worth every second round draft pick that you give up for him.
He'll be worth Conner when Conner took over.
Yeah. And this is one of those things where I'm confident enough in what I saw from Benny Snell to give up a second. Now it's worth the gamble to me in hopes of being able to acquire a first round pick towards the end of the season or towards middle of the season, if Snell is the guy. So take advantage of Conner being hurt now.
Or, yeah, and I agree. The worst case scenario is James Conner comes back in a timely manner, which I believe it's just an ankle sprain, so he's probably week to week. But Connor comes back and he's liable to get injured again. And then you're back in the same position where you might have a chance to capitalize on that. And then I think worst case scenario, what do you think Snell was worth going into the week? Maybe like a third or fourth?
Yeah, four. I mean, he was dropped in a couple leagues that I was in.
I would rather take the risk at spending a second and having it fall down to a third than like having the chance to have that second turn into a first. I would much rather, you know, go for the risk at that.
Yeah, and obviously like early second, it sucks. But if you're making a trade like this, you know, hopefully you're a mid round second, late round second. I would be good with that. Like I'm totally fine with that gamble. He's young enough. He's on a good offense. He's just unknown. Like we don't know enough about him to have that allure. Like he's still touted by a lot of analysts that really like him. So yeah, I think it's a good bet.
I agree, and I'm with you too. He just looked good. I got the same feeling, like that same sensation that I got when I was watching Malcolm Brown, and kind of being surprised, like wow, he actually looks pretty good, like running the ball here. And when we watched the Pittsburgh Steelers game, I got that same exact feeling. Like somehow Snell has changed this season, you know, this offseason, and he's maybe put in some work. I haven't read anything about him, you know, like there wasn't any indication that he was going to be able to come in lighter and stronger, because that's usually a lot of the camp buzz that happens. There's nothing circulating around him, so I was very delightfully surprised when I was watching him carry the ball.
Would you, let's flip this. Would you give up Snell if somebody offered you a second?
I think I would have to research more on James Conner. So like what I'm seeing right now is that the Steelers expect him to come back very soon, and they don't think that his ankle sprain is serious. I'd want to dig into that a little bit more, but in the current circumstance, it would depend on the second. I would probably say yes to a mid or late. I would say yes. I would give him up for an early, but I would probably turn down a mid or late. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel this. I feel like even for an early, I would almost rather gamble on the first. Like,
yeah, I don't want
my
to do
my
that.
Whole thing. And it's kind of like what we were just talking about. If I have him now and I can get a second, and I pass on the second, and he ends up, you know, being in a timeshare with James Conner, and it's a 60-40 split, and Conner's the guy, and now Snell's worth a third, I would much rather have that be the situation than me trading him for a second than have it. Missing out on a potential first.
Yeah, and that's true, because with this performance, he won't go below a third, even if Connor is in there, you know? Because, like, I think he's shown that he can make a pretty big fantasy impact if he gets the ball, so.
Yeah.
And he might even get to the point where he's going to force the Steelers to give him some work, regardless of what James Connor's status is, right?
Yeah. Okay, so here's a question. Rojo or Snell?
That's tough. I liked seeing Rojo. It was kind of funny with the situation you mentioned with Adrian Peterson, how he's been on the team for a week or 2 weeks and he gets the start right away and the bulk of the carries. The same thing did not happen with Leonard Fournette and Rojo. I was kind of surprised by that one, actually, out of all of them. So maybe it was kind of cool to see Rojo doing that, but I don't think that's going to last. So I honestly see them on completely different trajectories. Right now it's Rojo, but I think I would choose Snell I would kind of predict that to change.
Yeah, I mean, Rojo did look pretty solid, and
yeah.
Fournette didn't, and he just could be getting into shape or whatever. But yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point. Like AP came in and led the team in carries, and Fournette, same situation, came in and he was a backup. But we talked about this on the podcast. I fully expect, I think I tweeted it too, I fully expect Rojo to be the guy for the first few weeks until Fournette is completely acclimated. And they're going to need to run the ball a lot because Tom Brady did not look good. I think Tom Brady, I'm the biggest Tom Brady hater ever. Like, I can't stand him. I was the biggest Patriots hater when he was on the team. Now I want the Patriots to win the Super Bowl. So, like, I'm not saying this from a biased perspective. Tom Brady looked awful.
Yeah.
So they're going to need to run the ball a lot. And Rojo might be a viable option, even if Fournette is the guy. Like, I think there's going to be enough work for both of them. And I feel the same way about Snell and Connor. But the difference between their two situations is I think Fournette is a lot scarier of an opposition than Connor is. So I would lean Snell.
So I think in these situations, Snell becomes a buy, even though he's trending up, you're saying, right? You wouldn't ever recommend buying Connor, right? Because you're concerned about him becoming overtaken.
It's just like with Connor, it's the same story. I hate the injury prone guys, you know, unless you're super elite, unless you're Arian Foster. I will put up with Arian Foster's soft tissue injuries. I'm not going to put up with James Conner's injuries. Like, it's just not worth it for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad. It's sad, really. Like, the guy, he's the kind of person, I think, that you want to root for, but he's just had such bad luck with injuries.
It's tough.
Yeah.
Any other running backs this week that, I mean, James Robinson was a surprise throughout camp, and then getting the nod. Looked decent, nothing exceptional.
Antonio Gibson was a little depressing, I think, relative to what people's expectations were.
Speaking of that, yeah, Peyton Barber plotted his way to, like, just fantasy relevance.
Yeah.
And Antonio Gibson, much to, you know, we weren't surprised by this. You and I are not Antonio Gibson believers, but I don't see the path for Antonio Gibson being a guy that's going to get 20 plus touches a game.
I don't know. I would say the counterpoint would be that I think with his touches, he did look decent, though. So I don't think I'm not overly concerned that he'll be eliminated from a game plan.
No, I don't think so either. But yeah. Is he going to be the guy?
I think he could be. I think based on the limited action that I saw, I think he could be. And I see the potential that people see. But the results of this game, just like you're saying, for the stat box Warriors, they're not going to like what they see, and they might be concerned with that. So.
Well, he had 11 touches, dude.
Yeah, that's not what people wanted from Antonio Gibson, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
People are paying. You knew this just as well as I did because we watched the Trade Wire. So on the DynastyTradeCalculator.com, one of my favorite new features is we have a Trade Wire where you can actually look at real life trades that are being made. Choose any player, click the Trade Wire, you can see what trades are being executed in dynasty leagues. And there's a ton of people that are giving up first round draft picks for Antonio Gibson after the news dropped that he was basically going to be the focal point of the offense in the running game. And people that are trading first for him did not expect or did not want. They didn't trade a first to watch him touch the ball 11 times. I'd say the 15 to 20 is the magic spot.
I think if you're going to be a guy that's going to put up consistent points, you need minimum. I think some players can get it done. Like the Camaras can get it done right around 14 touches. I think that's the magic number. 14, 15, I guess 15 is a cleaner number. But anything around the 10, 11, you just need to be ridiculously efficient to hit those numbers. And it's just not, I mean, you need like Jamal Charles efficiency.
Yep.
So I don't know. I mean, I'm passing on Antonio Gibson. I'm happy for the people that were able to cash in on Gibson, but I'm not a believer in him long term. The fact that JD McKissick out targeted him in the passing game as well. So he got out carried in the run game and out targeted in the passing game.
Yeah.
I think it's just going to be a cluster all season with three guys just kind of mixing and matching. You're not getting enough consistent production to give up a first for Gibson. So I think that situation's a fade.
Yep. And speaking of mixing in, I was a little bit depressed with what I saw from Mixon.
Yeah.
Instead of mixing in. I anticipated him to have a little bit hotter of a start than that. And it kind of looks to me like the Bengals are just back to the same old as far as their offensive line and their capabilities of blocking, which is a little depressing. So I'm hopeful that we'll see something different, maybe a different look next week. But I was bummed to see that he couldn't get off on a hotter start than that. He was just, speaking of inefficiency, you know?
Yeah. No, it was tough. The thing is, I think Burrow gets better and teams respect him, I think things will open up for Mixon. And the thing is, like, I mean, Burrow, as a rusher too, Burrow was impressive. Like, so if he can be a guy that really keeps defenses honest, I think that'll be wheels up for Mixon. And once again, Mixon did the same thing last year. He started out really poorly. And then turn it on. I think Nick Chubb, same thing. Started out poorly week one and then turned it on. So Nick Chubb and also another bye candidate. You look at the box score with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and you'd be like, oh man, Kareem Hunt outtouched Nick Chubb. But Nick Chubb was sidelined. Like they mailed it in. Like they were done after the Ravens ran away with it. they basically just said, hey, we're going to rest Chubb, and then Hunt got the work. But when the game was, you can't even call it competitive, but when the game wasn't three touchdowns, Chubb was the guy getting most of the work.
Yeah.
So he's a nice little potential buy candidate if somebody didn't like the box score.
That's a good point, too, because I was looking at Mixon's ranking for this week, and he's right down there with Chubb. So Mixon was the 51st scoring running back in fantasy last week, and Nick Chubb was 53.
Right.
The big difference here is that Mixon had 21 touches. I'm not sure if you knew that.
Yep.
Chubb only had 11. So obviously, we keep saying that volume is king, but like in Mixon's case, it really didn't kind of translate into fantasy points. But, you know, I would bet that like Mixon can turn his volume into fantasy points in the future here. So we just got to keep hope alive for him right now. It stinks to see that 10 carry for sure. Like 19 carries, 69 yards. Ouch.
Yeah, not ideal.
No. That's a pretty good, well-rounded look at running backs. So we'll move into wide receivers. We'll finish things off. And again, these podcasts throughout the course of the season, we're going to try our best to cover as many of these big stories, dynasty-related, as possible. We're going to prioritize the ones that we can. I feel like every season, week one, every single game and every single player could become its own story. So we're going to try our best to pick and choose which ones you want to hear about the most. So. Wide receivers, this is a lot quicker than running backs because, like I said, that's where the meat and the potatoes of the conversation was. But we want to talk about the Atlanta Falcons wide receivers. Before the podcast started, Izzy, I asked you what you wanted to talk about, and that was one of the first things that you said. And we looked it up. Every single Atlanta starting wide receiver, 1, 2, and 3, all had 100-plus yards. And what's more, what was kind of surprising is that they had the same targets and the same receptions, right?
Yeah, so they each had 12 targets, 9 receptions, all cleared 100 yards. Calvin Ridley got the touchdowns, though, so that's what sets them apart.
Yeah, so I don't think that Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley's production is a big surprise with where they were being drafted preseason and going into the regular season, but the biggest one is Gage, right? Like, mm-hmm. Does this change how you feel about Gage, and do you feel like Matt Ryan can produce an offense with 3 fantasy-viable wide receivers?
No, so this is not surprising at all. I've been scooping Russell Gage up in leagues because as we've talked about before, I don't believe in Hayden Hurst as a pass-catching tight end. Like, he is a blocking tight end through and through. He's a guy that can sprinkle in receptions, but he's not a guy that's going to get you, 80, 90 receptions in a season, right? He's not a target hog. So Russell Gage made the most sense as being the Hooper replacement for me. And not to the point where I didn't think that he'd be this good to start, but I figured he would be the third leading, receiver over Hayden Hurst. So, And looking at this, and this is another reason why I've picked up Jaden Graham in all my leagues, is like, I think over the course of the season, I feel like Hayden Hurst will take a back seat in the receiving game and Jaden Graham will be in there. But if the Falcons can't protect Matt Ryan, Hayden Hurst, blocking will definitely pay dividends for them. So there's a couple layers to it. But yeah, I mean, this is a huge win for Russell Gage owners. The fact that he matched the target and reception shares of Julio and Ridley, and the fact that we've seen only a few quarterbacks ever. I think only actually one quarterback ever maintain the ability to support 3 receivers. And it was
Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning.
No, it's two quarterbacks. I believe it was Kurt Warner when he had Bolden, Fitzgerald, and Breston. They each had 1,000 yards, 3,000 yard receivers. And then Peyton Manning did it with Stokely, Harrison, and Wayne.
Oh, I got one, I think. 1989 Washington Redskins, the 1995 Atlanta Falcons.
What were the 3 Falcons in 1995?
Eric Metcalf, Terrence Mathis, and Burt Emanuel. And that's it.
Okay. So, I mean, this could be a situation where Matt Ryan could support 3,000-yard receivers, and they might have to.
5 times in history. Wow. So he'd be the 6th. That's bold. That's a bold prediction.
I think they're off to a good start.
It's not as bold after week one, right?
Yeah. But they're throwing the pill around. I mean, he threw the ball 54 times.
That's insane. He had almost 500 yards passing. Yeah. Yep.
So,
and I mean, with this is an offense with Todd Gurley now. So Todd Gurley, I think last year, I think he's averaged like 50 or 60 receptions a season. Does that change how you feel like that you think that might actually come to fruition with Todd Gurley's presence in the passing game?
I think he's toast. Like, I think that they're going to be forced in a situation where Todd Gurley's going to have to be kind of snap counted.
Yeah.
I can't imagine him being a 300 touchback anymore between running and receiving. I think he's probably going to have to be around 200 for him to stay healthy and efficient throughout the course of the season. So I'm not too concerned with the run game. I mean, a lot of this expectation of them having 3,000 yard receivers is the fact that I don't know if they have enough in the backfield to really be able to produce over the course of a season. I think they're going to be left to their passing devices.
Yeah.
And that's where Gage, Ridley, and Julio are really the only three in that. It's not like they have a lot of, you know, depth at receiver where they can mix in another, a fourth guy. And Hayden Hurst, like we talked about, he's not a guy that's going to get you, you know, 8 to 10 receptions a game, right? Yep. Or at least be a guy like Cooper was last year, or like an Ertz or a Waller or any of the top five tight ends. So, yeah, I think it's one of those things to monitor for sure. Russell Gage is probably still super cheap. If you need a flex play, somebody that you can toss in there to give you some boom or bust, you know, production for cheap, that's the type of boom or bust you want. You don't want the boom or bust as your wide receiver one or two. You want your boom or bust to be your flex guys. So, and yeah, that's the guy that you want.
Yeah.
In an offense that's going to pass the ball a lot, and he's one injury away from being a weekly wide receiver two or better. Mm-hmm. And you can still get him for a third round pick.
There you go. And speaking of boomer bust wide receivers, the next team I want to talk about is the Carolina Panthers. So everybody's spending all their draft capital on DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, and even Ian Thomas, I think, had a little bit of buzz in the offseason. And then here comes Robbie Anderson, and he just beats them all. With Teddy Bridgewater, like, nobody ever thought that Robbie Anderson's skill set would match well with Teddy Bridgewater. I shouldn't say nobody. I'm sure some people did, but
yeah.
I thought this was kind of one of the more surprising storylines of the week as far as wide receivers are concerned. But yeah, Robbie Anderson's performance, I think, puts him in he was in the top 10 for the week for wide receivers for fantasy scoring. I don't think that it's sustainable, but it's worthy of talking about. So what do you think about this?
Yeah, so I was super surprised by this because a lot of things that you mentioned. I figured Christian McCaffrey would get a shit ton of targets. He only got 4. I figured DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel would get manufactured touches. DJ Moore did look like he was getting touches manufactured for him a little bit. He did lead the team in targets. So he just wasn't as efficient as Robbie Anderson was with his. And yeah, I'm surprised that the marriage of Bridgewater and Robbie Anderson worked week one. So that was definitely my most surprising stat line, even more so than Corey Davis. I started Corey Davis in a few spots, and I'm less surprised by Corey Davis than I am Robbie Anderson. Even Russell Gage, I'm less surprised by Russell Gage than I am Robbie Anderson. The only other surprising stat line I can think of is Cephas from Detroit leading the Lions in targets and hitting 10. But yeah, this is something. This is my Watkins Award winner. So I tweeted this out. Basically, the player that you think is going to be complete ass relatively the rest of the way, after having a good week one. And Sammy Watkins it's named after Sammy Watkins because he does it every year, where he comes out, has a really good start to the season, and then disappears, and is very inconsistent. I feel like that's going to be Robbie Anderson this year. I think you mentioned it's Corey Davis for you.
Yeah, I think it's Corey Davis. I don't want it to be because I actually like Corey Davis and I would like to see him break out, but it's difficult to believe that AJ Brown will stay down. I don't think he can keep a good man down like that, but yeah, Corey Davis is my guy. Well, he'll flash in week one and he'll kind of disappear, but I don't want it to happen. I want to be wrong.
Absolutely. So yeah, I think that's a good place to wrap up the tight ends. Nothing too notable outside of, you know, Fanton Hawkinson finishing in the top 5 for scoring tight ends so far. Good start for the year two wide.
Yeah, how weird was Fant? Like somebody else on Twitter pointed this out, but it seemed like he had some conditioning issues because after each route or each reception, he would either pull himself out of the game or be taken out of the game. And I'm not sure if that was a strategic thing or not, but it seemed like he was huffing and puffing a lot on the sidelines.
It must be hard carrying the offense, you know?
Yeah, that's right. And Drew Lock, your boy, like I think he bears mentioning, like I thought he looked good at times, but
on and off, similar to Daniel Jones. Like it was just too erratic. Not good.
That game seemed like they had a lot of rusty players. That was my take on that
one.
Everybody is rusty.
So. I agree with that.
And maybe that kind of falls into the Noah Fant thing too. They just they weren't well conditioned and they weren't ready to be in game shape because they missed the preseason. I thought we were going to see that around the entire NFL for week one, but there was a surprisingly large amount of offense. I was shocked.
I agree. And Judy with a couple big drops cost me a win in one of my games because I lost a game by like half a point and I needed that. I think Judy just needs to get comfortable and I think they need Sutton badly.
Yeah. Yeah, they need to play off one another. That's a lot of weapons on that team. Jeez.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So that's a well-rounded show. We're going to come back again next week when all the new stories come dropping. And we're going to have a little bit more information on some of these injuries to cover, too, so we can find out exactly what you guys should be doing with your players, hold, buy, sell, all the fantastic stuff with Dynasty Fantasy Football. Thank you for listening to us this week, you guys. We'll talk to you again next time. Bye. There's no way I'm last. Technically, I'm last. 101 pick. I'm bad. Bad at the bone. Ain't mad at the dome. Ain't rather than know the anatomy. No valuable roses. Dandy to know the man. JPAZ. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. All right, I'm recording. Should I start?
Testing. Testing.
What does Joe Rogan say for his opening? What's up, you freak bitches, right?
What's up, freak bitches? Yeah.
I gotta find something like that for myself. What's up, everybody? Welcome to this week's edition of the Dynasty Trade.
You're gonna have to redo that. You distorted like a motherfucker.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Maybe don't get so close and yell into it.
Go a little bit lower in gain. I'm not even that close. What's up, everybody?
That was better.
Welcome to this week's edition of the DTC podcast.
No, you can't do it. It's so boring.
I know. Well, hey, what the f- am I supposed to do?
Hey, first of all, don't cuss. It's a PG-13 show.
I'm going to have some more chicken.
Okay.
Mm.
This is a perfect...
Not as good as Chicago food, though.
Perfect intro. Are you going to continue?
I can't talk soft. So which is it?
Maybe try to like yell, but not be so close to the mic. Take it from the top. This is going in the outtakes, by the way.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the DTC podcast. Episode 182.
I think it's 183.
183. Episode 183. That sounded better if I was when I was leaning back.
Yeah, you seem like you were definitely. There's more. I don't want to say there's more space. It felt like there was more space between you and the mic, so you can definitely hear the space. I liked it.
Well, what do you think? It's not gonna sound good. I was 3 feet back. Okay. You guys gotta stay upstairs.
But you know what happened?
Huh? Get the upstairs!
On the carpet and the hard floor.
Mm-hmm. Why is she out of her kennel?
Because I let her out.
No.
Why?
Because she was supposed to be in her kennel. Is it cleaned up?
No, she doesn't know what to do.
Who doesn't? Becky?
The babies? Yeah.
I gotta go. I'll be right back. I'm f***ing defeated, man. The f***ing dog's puking all over up there. Like, we got a brand new, tutor / nanny today. It's like, this is a f***ing disaster.
Is she a shit show?
Well, it's her first day and she doesn't want to have anything to do with the dog, which I understand.
Oh, she doesn't like dogs?
Today, you know, like, while I was working.
Wait, she doesn't like dogs?
No.
Wow, she must be a psychopath. Is she like Arab?
Nope. He's Betty White Cracker.
Betty White Cracker that doesn't like dogs but likes kids. I think you're f***ing hiring the wrong people, bro. I'm sorry. I don't know where you're finding these people. How do you like kids and not dogs?
I let Leslie hire. Oh, Leslie did the whole interview process and everything.
Is Leslie in f***ing HR? What does she know about hiring? Just next time, just send me the candidates. I'll take care of it.
Better than our neighbors. Our neighbors got some Russian guy who was fucking all strung out on crack.
You guys gotta find a better farm system. This is gonna be a really good Easter egg, by the way.
I'm gonna delete my recording and start over. You want to shoot Izzy? Are you still rolling? Should we just roll?
Oh yeah, we're rolling, baby. This is going in. It's gonna be epic.
All right, well, I'll start over.
Do you want to try to restart, or we just?
I guess we'll try here. See what happens.
Okay.
All right.
All right. You all right?